Memorial Day. The summer's here. That's it. I mean, we're in it. We're in summer now.
We're in it.
No more waiting. It's here. And
it's
we're
here.
Happy about that.
Huh? We're stoked.
It's here. What a great time. What a great time. We got baseball this week at Plainsman Park. We got like recruiting over the summer kicks into high gear with the staff. I think big things are happening. I want to start though, Zach, with
Brad forgot this show existed this morning.
I did a little bit. Like holiday morning, coming off a long tournament weekend. I got all the excuses ready. And my son mentioned something about the show. Bo mentioned something about the show. And I looked, and it was 8 minutes before we usually record.
Right, which I was still in bed when you texted me. And I'm like, no, let's definitely push it back. That's great.
But. Yeah. So we're here. How about the fact we're here is a win, which is a great lesson for life. Sometimes just like being here.
Just show up.
You do better than a lot of people.
Showing up, Brad.
Yeah. Xavier Atkins shows up at number 19 on On3's list of the top 100 college football players for 2026. Now, I've heard a lot of people, rightfully so, take this list and go, where's Byron Brown? And I think that's valid, especially with some of the other names on the list. But I don't think we appreciate how good Xavier Atkins is. What do you think? Like, are we appropriately valuing Xavier Atkins as a member of this team?
Probably not. And look, you know, I did a show reacting to this list when it dropped, and admittedly so, like, I thought he'd be in the 30s. If you would have asked me, like, all right, Xavier Atkins is the only Auburn Tiger on this list, where is he? I probably would have said, like, 32 or something. So, higher than, so, I mean, maybe I'm even, you know, maybe I'm even a little too low on him. You know, one of the aspects of it is, like, you know, Auburn has a rich history at linebacker, and I think over time that position in like modern football, I don't think it's not as important as it used to be as the game has spread out across the field. And so I do think there's less of a load on it. But what do you get in Xavier Atkins? I mean, you talk about him compared to other great Auburn linebackers, and his skill set's different. I mean, he can move laterally extremely well. He can rush the passer extremely well. I think he's actually very underrated when it comes to being able to rush the passer. I do think he was put in a really good situation last year as far as the guys in front of him having to eat up blocks. I'm excited to see now that he's the focal point of the defense and when offenses are prepping for Auburn's defense. You know, I think they were circling, you know, Keldrick Falk, you know, before they got to Xavier Atkins. And that probably changed over the course of the season, Brad. But I'm excited to see, all right, what is X's next step now that he's not sneaking up on anybody, you know?
Yeah. The write-up in On3 had a couple of stats in there. 10 sacks with the most by an off-ball linebacker since 2023. So you talk about him rushing the passer and him impacting quarterbacks, most for an off-ball linebacker since 2023. 81 impact plays, which are the most of any returning linebacker ahead of 2026. So, yeah, he's not built like Takiyo Spikes. He's not built like Dontarius Thomas. He's not even built like a Kevin Sears from the early 2000s. It was 6'4", 240. Because to your point, that kind of linebacker is like fewer and further between now than it used to be. What you ask your linebackers to do is different now than what it used to be. And so what he's doing in this system at that position is elite. And we keep coming back to that word with this staff and the build of this team, elite. You're getting elite linebacker play from Xavier Atkins. And I'm really curious to see this year.
What is an impact play? What is that?
I don't know. I don't know how they define that. I don't know how they defined it. Because they also have in their write-up, Atkins 11.4% clip on clip on a per play basis is ranked top 10 among high volume power forward defenders. It reads a little bit like
Google impact play.
Yeah.
And this says sacks, tackle for loss, interceptions, and forced fumbles. And like, he didn't get 81 of those things.
He didn't get 81 of those together?
No.
I don't know. Okay.
Forced fumbles, picks, tackles for loss, and sacks? No, there's no way.
Yeah, that's a good point. Could it? I mean, how many tackles did he have? They don't count those in there, too, because the number would be higher.
Yeah. I mean, regardless, like, he's good. I didn't know what that metric was.
Whatever the metric is, he had more of them than anybody else. So everybody's using the same metric.
Which is, yeah, maybe share what the metric is, but...
It's like we go back to the Byron Brown conversation. It's like, well, he only did a 3,001. He was in the American Conference. Right. And so were a dozen other quarterbacks who didn't do that.
Well, it's a number 81 impact plays.
Yeah.
So he had 60. This is ESPN's tracking. 60 tackles, 9 sacks, 2 forced fumbles and a pick. That put him 72. At
72. 82. Put him at 72.
72. Yes. Yes, it would. Sure would. Sure would, Brad. Yep.
I'm not trying to correct you. I'm just trying to make sure we're on the same page.
No, I needed to be corrected there. I couldn't add 4 small numbers together.
All right, let's go with an even smaller number. 2. What did you put up on social media? Yeah,
so for folks on audio, I put up a graphic over the weekend that I thought we're going to get. Whenever I have a hard time answering these questions, I'm like, okay, I think other people will have fun with this. So if you're just listening, it says you can only pick 2. Who are you taking? And it's a picture of 6 Auburn running backs.
Yep.
Do you want to identify the running backs, Brad, or would you like me to?
Trey Mason.
Yes.
Michael Dyer.
Yes.
Kerryon Johnson.
Yes.
Ben Tate.
Yes.
Tank Bigsby.
Yes.
Jarquez Hunter.
There we go.
I went left to right, top, left to right, bottom.
That's how I would have read it too. No, I think you nailed that.
Okay.
So Trey Mason was probably the most common answer, but number 2 was all over the place.
Sure.
I don't think Trey Mason would have been in my answer when I posted this.
Can we do the annoying thing where I get down in the weeds? What kind of offense are we running?
Yeah, you can do whatever you want. My answer, though, is going to be like, this is just general. Okay. You know, it's in a vacuum.
Okay. This is much harder than it should be. I think
I was pleasantly surprised by how many Ben Tate answers there were.
Yeah, I know. I think, and I like Ben so much as a running back, and maybe I undervalue him. I'd have him 6th. I think I'd have him 6th.
You'd have him 6 out of these?
Yeah. But we didn't ask that. You just asked, I could take 2. Dyer was underrated.
Dyer just wasn't here for very long, but man, when he was here at the right time.
He was here for 2 years. And people don't think about the 11 year that he had, but he had a great 2011. Just the rest of the team wasn't as good.
Yeah.
They were replacing everybody except Michael Dyer. Kerryon is on that list. Kerryon is way too versatile to be left off my list.
So my answer when I posted it, I think I've changed it because I have to put Trey on there.
Yeah.
I've been peer pressured, but I think people are right. But my answer when I posted this was Kerryon and Jarquez.
That's so funny. That was going to be my initial 2.
There's a lot of strong arguments for Tank.
Yeah.
Because of like when he was here, like he was the best player on the field in a lot of instances. And like, we just didn't get him any help.
Right. Yeah. A decent offensive line and a decent offensive scheme with both Bo Nix and Tank Bigsby would have been really good to see. There were flashes of it in 2020.
Sure.
That's the only year we got that together, and there were flashes.
There were.
When Bo was a sophomore and Tank was a freshman. So I would have liked to have seen that develop more. You know, Carry On played in the league. Yeah, Carry On one, and either Mason or Jarquez two, probably for me.
You're putting Carry On at one, definitively. Yeah.
Yes, wow. Absolutely. Because the guy could catch. He's got a little shake. He could make you miss. He could run through guys if needed.
Heck of a back.
Unbelievable.
I mean, the 2017 season doesn't happen without him.
Yeah.
This is when I was doing midday radio show during that season. And Gene Chizik came on like once a week in studio to hang out with us. And I remember being blown away early in the season when he's like, Carry On Johnson will be the best player on the field in most of the games Auburn plays.
Like, really?
Yeah. Really? And boy, was that true. Boy, was that true.
When you think back to, let me go back to the 2015 season. You had Carry On as a true freshman. You had Javon Robinson. You had Peyton Barber. You had Rock Thomas. Peyton Barber played in the league several years.
Yeah, he did.
And you had Carry On as an impact freshman on that team. You had an
And Gus didn't know how to bring on a running back, so he just put him in at Wildcat or whatever.
Right.
The direct snap thing. I'm like, let's just put him in at running back.
Yeah.
Please?
Yeah. You can let him catch passes out of the backfield, which he did with Carry On more than some of the others. But that was an embarrassment of riches at running back. Like, when we think back to Gus's teams, they had running backs. Good gracious, they had running backs.
And they could use them.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, they had some guys who you knew what they were going to. We talked about this a week or two ago. You knew what was going to happen when a guy came off the sidelines sometimes. But you roll right from that group into now I got Cameron Petway as a part. Petway and Carry On together?
Insane in hindsight.
Ridiculous.
Insane. All right. Yeah, let's rank these real quick. So I'm with you with Carry On at one. I think most people are going to disagree. Let's do Trey at two, Jarquez at three. We're cool with that?
Yeah, I'm okay with that.
A lot of people are going to hate how low Tank is on that list.
I'm going Tank next. Tank is four for me.
And then I think I'm going Ben Tate, then Michael Dyer.
Okay. I probably go Dyer, then Tate.
But Dyer's good. And he has like one of the most historic plays in the history of Auburn football.
But it's not just that play. I mean, he was good. They didn't use him much the first month of the season. Yeah. They started using him in 2010 when they'd already worn everybody down and they were just ground down to dust.
Right.
And then he just run past them.
Mm-hmm.
But he had a 1,000-yard year in 2011.
And 2010, right?
Yeah. Oh, ooh, did he have? I don't know. I know he did in 2011 because he kept the streak going. If they used him enough to get him 1,000 in 2010, that'd be, I don't remember that. Maybe they did.
Yes, he had 1,093 yards.
Wow. Okay. Auburn must have had 5,000 rushing yards in 2010.
3,900.
Okay. Yeah. It was nothing for them to roll up 300, 400 yards a game.
Insane. Yeah, 1,400 for Cam, a little over 1,000 for Dyer, 810 for Ontario McCaleb, 395 for Mario Fannin. T-Zack had 71. He'd do those reverses.
Yeah.
Fun.
And then they came out. And so imagine. And
Barrett Trotter had 68. Way to go, yeah. Barrett Trotter.
They would have had over 4,000 that year if they had done one thing differently. So the day that the NCAA nonsense started was the day before the homecoming game against Chattanooga, which, by the way, RIP November homecoming games. I wish we'd bring that back. I don't like homecoming in September, but that's a separate thing.
Homecoming has no impact on me whatsoever.
Homecoming against Chattanooga, I'm not shocked by that.
Yeah.
And they come out and throw the ball all over the field.
Mm.
They could have run for 600 yards against Chattanooga. But I will always believe that that was all right, Cam, go out and just go wild.
Is that the game where he play action it to himself on like their own five, like step forward and just.
No, that was Louisiana Monroe. That was
earlier.
You're right.
Year, yeah.
You're right.
And he hit Emory Blake for 92 or 97 or whatever.
Yeah, delicious.
Longest pass on Auburn touchdown or longest pass on Auburn football history.
Yep, 94-yarder. Yep.
Yeah. All right, cool. Yeah, who would y'all pick? If you go and pick two, let us know.
Yeah.
Let us know.
Beautiful.
So today's obviously a holiday, of course, yep. for Memorial Day. For the folks who, you know, gave the ultimate price to serve this country. So for folks, family who is impacted by that, thoughts and prayers are with y'all today as a lot of people are out celebrating despite the weather. We have the country and society we do and the freedoms we do because of your family members. So thank you so much.
No question. Well said. It's also a day, Zach, that for Auburn fans can be a bit of a rough day. So we lost Rod and Paula Bramlett 7 years ago today. I can't believe it's been 7 years. Can't believe it. And so, like, we were talking before the show, do we want to, you know, how do we want to talk about this? Do we want to address it today? And I think we both have something that has really nothing to do with broadcasting. So the thing that, and I could talk about Rod for hours, but I got a couple things that I'll bring up from the humanitarian side. When my son was born, we lived in North Carolina. And Rod was being honored. Now, my son is 4 months old at this point, maybe. Mm-hmm. I don't even think he's 4 months old. Rod was being honored as Alabama's Broadcaster of the Year, and all of the state Broadcasters of the Year come together in North Carolina for a big event, for a big celebration. And he was going to go. So this is an hour away from where we lived. He made the special trip an hour just to see my young son hold the baby, you know, like Rod and Paula loved children, loved babies, small kids. They were drawn to them and vice versa. Little kids loved Rod and Paula. And it was always really, really special that he would go an hour out of his way just to come and see the new kid. And what that turned into was, like, we didn't know at the time we were going to be moving back to Auburn several years later. But Rod's kids are 4 years apart from each other. Rod and Paula's kids were separated by 4 years. My kids are separated by 4 years. So I would come in to the office maybe after a rough morning or a rough weekend or what have you and say, man, this, you know, this has gone on or whatever, kind of lay it out. And without fail, Rod was kind of that calming presence. So go, I remember when this would happen with Shelby or Joshua or this, that, or the other. And he would kind of impart that parental wisdom.
And I'm sure he was so eloquent and smooth when telling you, you know, a specific story or imparting any sort of wisdom.
Yeah. Yeah, the valley would come out in Rod a little bit at that point when he would share that.
Nothing wrong with that.
Yeah.
Nothing wrong with the valley coming out.
I loved it. It's the thing, like, what I miss the most has nothing to do with broadcasting.
Right.
That's the thing that I miss the most.
Well, and to your point, you know, I interned at the Auburn Network, and then, you know, they gave me a job, thankfully, when I graduated. And at the time, the Auburn Network's office was, it was combined with, it was IMG at the time. And so we all kind of intermingled, whether it's in, you know, the water cooler, you know, the break room, the lobby, whatever.
Yeah.
And, you know, where Rod would sit was outside of my office at the time. And so, you know, we'd visit and chat, but he was kind of the first glimpse of, you know, I'm young, I'm still trying to learn, you know, how personalities work in this business and all of that. And he was the first guy that I really got to know that wasn't necessarily all sports all the time. Like, he was a human outside of it. He wasn't just like a robot being, you know, constantly working on his programming 24/7, which I'm not saying there's anything wrong with that. It's just Rod wasn't that. Yeah. And like, really into like a lot of the nerdy stuff that I liked, where I'm like, oh, okay, cool. You can like, you know, the comic book stuff. And, you know, yeah. He'd get bored and walk over to, or he'd go over to like Hastings and get like comic books and stuff and like talk about it and all that stuff. So that was super, that was kind of a cool eye opening thing to see kind of, you know, the human side of these super successful broadcasters.
To that point, 2019 NCAA tournament, we're in Kansas City for the Sweet 16 and the Elite Eight. In between the Sweet 16 and the Elite Eight, happening right across the street from our hotel at the big convention center, was Comic-Con.
Oh, yeah, okay.
So we're at the arena on one day to call a Sweet 16 win over North Carolina. The next day, we go to Comic-Con. And he's like, hey, do you want to go? I'm like, of course I want to. Yeah. I've never been to a Comic-Con before. It's crazy. This is wild. That's a whole separate story. Comic-Con, by the way, wow.
Sure.
Different world.
Yeah.
Whole different world. Amazing that thousands of people can be in a place for basketball and thousands of other people can be there for something totally different.
Mm-hmm.
And we got over there and like the cost to get in was way more than I realized. Rod saw it first and was like, hey, don't worry. I'm going to pay for you to get in. You don't need to pay, fill in the blank to get in. And I'm like, oh no, Rod, that's, you're like, no, I got it. Just so that's two things at one. Like one, it's the other side of Rod and then the generosity.
Uh-huh. Right.
And then the next day after Comic-Con, you go and call an Elite Eight win over Kentucky for the first Final Four.
Yeah. One of the best games I've ever seen ever.
Yeah.
Right.
So, like, what'd you do in between? Did you read up on notes? Well, some. Also, Also went to Comic-Con and hung out.
I didn't know that. You hadn't told me that story. That's awesome. That's awesome. So, yes, we'll be remembered forever. So, y'all named the broadcast booth after him. Is that what y'all recently did?
Okay. Yep. Yeah, the home radio booth at baseball is the Rod Bramlett home radio booth. That's like sometimes the right thing is the easy thing. Sometimes it's not. Sometimes the easy thing is the right thing. Sometimes it's not. In this case, it was both the right thing and the easy thing to do.
No brainer. Cool. Cool that y'all did that.
So, and if I can share one more story again, I could do this. This could have been the whole show, but, I mentioned them coming to see Bo when he was a baby, when Lydia was born. And this is a week or two after she was born. They stopped by the house. We're living in Auburn at this point. And Lydia, when she was a baby, would really cry when anyone other than, frankly, her mom held, like even a lot sometimes when I would, but especially if it was not one of the two parents. And so Paula wanted to hold Lydia. And we're like, all right, she may cry. And he's like, that's fine. That's fine. Sure enough, Paula takes this little two-week-old baby, and she throws a fit. Lydia's crying and screaming, and she just, and like, we're so anxious. We'll take her. So, nope, she's all right. It's okay. Paula was completely unbothered by this child. And she did eventually, you know, I mean, she wasn't going to hold her for 20 minutes of screaming, but there was no immediate like, oh, okay. No, she's fine. It's okay. She just loved holding the baby.
Yeah.
Just loved holding the baby. And so that's the stuff we miss. That's the stuff we honor.
Yep. Absolutely.
Yeah.
So, great. All right.
Yeah.
Does that do it for today's show?
I think it does. Right. Yeah. I think that's an appropriate way to end it. Thanks everybody for watching. Thanks for listening. Remember, until next time, everyone has vices. Make sure Village Vice is one of yours.